The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
It's gone to the short side. Oh, it's not gone to the short side. It's gone to the try line. Antonin Murray.
I don't think we met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
Hi, Rob. Zeeb's here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next.
He's calling.
When Ring Rose comes through. Oh. That is brilliant from Ring Rose. Ring Rose is going here. What a score.
Welcome to the Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. I'm joined once again in studio by the evergreen Pat McCarry.
Good morning.
Wearing a lovely cardi.
Oh, it's one of my old favourites there. It's well worn, but much loved.
Excellent. And we're very happy to be joined on the line by Coventry Wasps centre and will man Brendan Macken. Brendan, hello.
Hello. How are things? Good morning.
We're doing pretty well. Yeah, it's good. Coming up a little bit later, Pat caught up with former Ulster prop John O'Foe, who spoke at length about his time at Ulster and paid tribute to quote-unquote freaks of nature, Stevie Ferris and Tommy Bowe. It's a good interview, that.
John was in cracking form, yeah. Yeah. He told us some stories about being a stag and stuff like that, and some nights out on the bus.
And we'll be looking ahead to the weekend's Champions Cup games. We're going through all the permutations there. But Mr. Macken, I'm going to flash back to a 2009 Blackrock Senior Cup team. That was a serious team. Andy Conway, Jordy Murphy, Dave Heffernan, Dennis Buckley, and yourself. How were those days?
Yeah, it was. Jesus. It was great. Probably one of the most enjoyable, actual playing years, I've had. And then to go on to see what the lads have done, at club level, obviously seeing Heffo and Dennis going win the championship in the Pro 12 was brilliant. And then the other two lads, seeing what they've done as well it's been great. And the fact is, we're still so close now as well. It's also great, and we're still speaking on a regular basis about our games and stuff like that with each other. And then going out, and I played against Jordy 2 years ago, and then played against Heffo and Dennis last year. So Andrew's the only one that I haven't got my hands on yet.
All right, yeah. Is it funny now that with Jordy signing for Ulster, it was a hat tip to Gav Comiskey, actually, who spotted this in a piece. As of next season, you'll all be playing your trade outside Leinster. That probably isn't how you'd have seen it.
Well, yeah, I know. Yeah, at the time, probably not. But I think Dennis and Heffo will always say they were always going to Connacht. Because Dennis actually played his inter-pro stuff with Connacht, so he was always heading there. But I think the rest of us always kind of thought we'd be staying in Dublin. But that's just kind of how it goes. I think we've all probably left at the perfect time, really. Andrew was obviously first to go, and then I went after him, and Jory's going at the end of this season. But I reckon the timing's been perfect, to be honest.
You've ended up in a decent place over in Wasps. I mean, even looking at the names that surround you, you went over, I think Jimmy Downey went over with you at the time. Willie LaRue, Christian Reid, Kyle Eastmond, Marcus Watson, former Sevens boy there. Danny Cipriani, the dual scrum half speed combo of Robson and Simpson, and learning from Curtly Beale. Not bad.
Yeah. It's we're absolutely spoiled for choice here, and my first year, Charles Piatown, George Smith were there, and they're probably two of the most impressive players I've ever come across. So this weekend it's going to be interesting up against Charles again, but the talent within the squad is crazy, and it obviously adds to the competition to get in. To get on the team for the weekend, but no, it's great, really enjoy it.
What's it like having Piatow in the to be around and to train with? Is he throwing out new stuff all the time? Like, is he a horrible guy to ever have like a one-on-one tackling drill with? Or
absolutely, because his feet are bananas. They're absolutely lightning quick. Added to the fact he's about 100 kilos, he's full of muscle. So you never actually want to get yourself caught in a one-on-one with Charles, because you'll find yourself you'll probably look a bit silly.
How about Christian Wade? Is he good in those drills?
Christian is probably the fastest person I've ever seen on a rugby pitch. I think at his GPS, we wear obviously all the teams would be wearing those GPS things, making time how quick you're going, and he's going about 11 meters per second, which is, I don't think any rugby player is really touching that. I think what's the really, 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 really quick guys would be getting 10.5, 10.6, and Christian's regularly getting 11, 11.1, 11.2. So he's an ex-sprinter. So he's one of those guys who probably should have plenty more English caps. He's just unlucky with selection and that, because, you know, I think before I joined Ross, he scored one unbelievable try in the RDS, which Dara Fanning reminded me of there last week.
I remember that try, yeah. That was a ridiculous finish out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere, yeah.
You played with Johnny May as well, though, at Gloucester. So who's faster in a straight line, 50 yards, Johnny May or Mr. Wade?
Christian, yeah, Mr. Wade.
All right.
So if you had the two of them in a track, you'd say Mr. Wade. But there's a fella, Ian Madigan, was telling me about a guy called Matt Prather out of Bristol, who Ian reckons is actually quicker than Mr. Wade. So it'll be interesting next year if the two of them had a bit of a one-on-one.
Jesus,
is this lad English? Is he, or can we claim him in any way?
Yeah, he is.
All right.
He is, yeah, no, he's an English fella.
Yeah, it's too late for a project player now as well. It'll be 5 years now, Pat.
Have you, what is it, caught up with Ian over there, like, since he's got over there at Bristol? Are flying it, aren't they?
Yeah, well, they're, like, you know, I spoke to him a couple of times. They're absolutely flying it. I think their big test is when they come to the Premiership, because they're more or less up now, really. Like, they're not going to be caught in that playoff system that used to happen. The Championship's gone now, so I think their real test is when they come up to the Premiership, because they probably don't even have to get out of third gear and they'll win most games by 40 points.
What happens, Brendan, what is it when, because you know, with the Ireland squad being announced and stuff like that, but, like, we've heard that Joe Schmidt kind of keeps track of everyone, and we talked to Chris Farrell and he said that he sends him over clips and would give him the odd phone call. Like, do you hear from the Irish, you know, not even Joe, but anyone from the Irish management team much? Like, would they be in touch saying, you know, we've looked at these clips from your game, anything like that? Are they good for staying in touch that way?
Yeah, no, they are, to be fair. We actually played both Connacht and Ulster in pre-season friendlies, and then obviously Ulster were in our group in Europe, so they'd be keeping tabs on that way, especially if we find ourselves playing against English teams.
Ireland squad time, right? So announced yesterday, it's fresh off the presses. We have a number of ins and a number of outs, Pat. Let's go through the ins and outs, I think, because all the main big names are there, so there's no surprises. But first, McFadden in. Mr. Larmour's in, yeah. Rory Scannell's in, Sean Cronin's back in, Joey Carver straight in after his injury, no Dave Kearney, no Darren Sweetnam, no Stuart McCluskey, and John Cooney wasn't able to make it in. What was your first reaction?
Yeah, you're looking for the surprise names sometimes when you're going through that, and the ones that jumped out at me were McFadden and Quinn Rue, and then just to see that Cooney wasn't there. So those were the kind of three ones that kind of stood out to me. But let's say just start up with someone like McFadden, in good form at the moment. Seems to be a favourite of Joe Schmidt's as well, and a guy who kind of can come in and do the job. I was saying, I don't think for me he'd be in like a matchday 23 going to Paris or anything, but then if he was, he wouldn't let you down. That's almost what he's known for. He won't let you down. He's that type of a guy. Like, and just rewarded. He kind of hit form at the right time.
Brendan?
Yeah, no, I actually completely agree. I think you know, Fur is one of those guys who, you know, he's unbelievably brave, and that's exactly it. He won't let you down. He's the type of guy, whereas if you're, you know, say, tough game against the French, he's almost the perfect guy that you want out there. Added to the fact now he's playing some great stuff. You know, that lovely step off his right foot, I think it was to leave Stockdale, to score that try, and then you know, he set up Jordan Larmour as well in that game. So yeah, I actually think Ferg, you know, really, really deserves a spot. I'm delighted to see him back in there. Same with Sean Cronin as well. Like, he's playing excellent. John Cooney's one of those guys I thought, you know, would probably be in. But he's only bringing two scrum halves, though, is he?
No, he's bringing three.
Yeah, so that's Jeremy and McGrath and Murray, yeah.
So they're all in. So this is the one where I don't think it's a surprise, given that the three have been embedded in the Irish setup for some time. But it would have been great to see Cooney in, because he has been in serious form.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, he's been brilliant. And added to the fact, you know, he's goal kicking and he's taken on so much more responsibility up there. And, you know, his box kicking's been on the money and his game management's been on the money. It would have been great to see him in there.
Mm, you played with him under 20s as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I played with him. I played with both Kieran and John.
Yeah.
To be fair, they're two excellent scrum halves. You know, I think Ireland are actually are spoiled for choice with their nines. And then Connor obviously is probably, you know, arguably could probably one of the best nines around at the moment.
So the Sean Cronin both in form and Niles Connell's injury means that the hookers probably picked themselves. Pat, to be fair.
Yeah, well, like he was coming back, and it would have been interesting to see if they were all there as well. You know, would Sean have made the cut? Because I don't think he made even that little mini camp they had in Carton House there last month either. So it looked like he was on the outside, and I don't know what work he had to do to get back, but just kind of benefited maybe from just getting that run, like with James Tracy getting injured and Rickard being injured as well. Finally getting a starting run, showing that he can come off like from the start of games, not just a kind of bench impact player. And it's good to see, because he's been coming close to scoring tries all year, and it's actually getting over the line at the weekend. It makes a big difference, I think, for someone like Sean as well. So I can all of a sudden see him stepping in right again, just backing up Rory Best, and Rob Herring's just a safe pair of hands to kind of throw in. But it'll be, I think, I would say for Paris, Best and Sean Cronin.
Yeah, Cronin was going very close to a few tries. I noted that because I had him in my Fantasy Pro 14 for most of the season, and he'd get stopped like 3 yards off the lane. The line, two phases later, Leinster score, and I'm going, ah, Jesus. The Rory Scannell over McCluskey, do we think that was a straight shootout between the two?
Yeah, well, it's like you just kind of got the sense again, like I didn't think McCluskey had that bad a game against Fiji, but after that game, it's just, you're like, Dwight Schmidt was talking about errors and stuff being made. You're just like, there's going to be a couple of guys who paid a price for not having a great game against Fiji, and McCluskey seems to be a guy who's just, he's just always like one step away from the door and he's out again. And I've been watching him for in a lot of Ulster's Champions Cup games, and just such a good player. He's getting off great offloads again at the weekends against La Rochelle, enjoyed himself out there. And then Scannell, Scannell is another guy who's all of a sudden getting a run of games. He wasn't before in 2017. He is now, so he gets it. Like, I'm not upset about that, because I think Scannell's a great player.
And he's a different type of 12.
Yeah. So, but again, you'll have McCluskey, and you'll have, you know, Ulster upset about Cooney and McCluskey, and then Connacht are giving out about Tiernan O'Halloran maybe not being there again. So, valid points again, but, you know, I'm not going to complain with Rory Scannell being in that squad.
Mm. Jordan Larmour, the clips of Jordan Larmour seem to be travelling all over the place. Is there much chat about what he's doing over in England, Brendan?
Yeah, especially after that, especially after the try scored against Munster. To be fair, I think I watched that with a few of the lads, and, you know, I think after that, I think everyone was thinking, who the hell is this guy? And I actually think he reminds me of Rob a small bit, the way he runs, kind of, you know, that explosivity he's got, and the way his back's a bit hunched. But he's absolutely on fire at the moment. It's great to see him. It's great to see him included. You know, for such a young guy, it looks like any occasion, any big occasion, doesn't really faze, and he kind of takes it in his stride. And I've actually heard from you know, fellas over here, Stuart Lancaster's meant to be excellent with young lads, a couple of lads in our squad who had him when they were up at the Leeds Academy, and he's meant to be really, really good at bringing, you know, guys 19, 20, 21 into a first team, and, you know, making sure that they're mentally right as well as physically right, and he seems to be doing a great job at Leinster.
You were saying, Andy, myself and Andy were both at the Leinster game at the weekend, Brendan, and we both noticed this moment where just Glasgow punted the ball just straight into Larmour's hands. He had around 30 yards of space in front of him, and there was just this moment, I suppose, Andy, wasn't there, where you just, there was an intake of breath in the stadium where everyone's waiting to see what Larmour's going to do here, and he didn't disappoint, did he?
The entire ground seemed to sort of sit back, reach for the popcorn and go, right, off you go, Jordan. This is going to be amazing. And it's just weird. That's an uncommon feeling. It was more than a sound.
Yeah.
It was a feeling in the ground. And I suppose it was the combination of him and Lowe as well, which is actually what happened in that feeling move, which is, it's good. It's box office. Though, yeah, Lowe against against Matawalu was its own little entertainment thrill. So if you're, when you're facing a player like that, Brendan, I mean, it, what do you do? Okay, I know this sounds like a really stupid question, but if you see a guy with feet like that coming from fullback, how do you plan to play against it?
Well, you try and make sure that you're not left, you know, you're not left kind of alone, you're not left stranded. So he's able to, like, he's able to pick which side he can do you on. Kind of got to make sure the guys on either side of you are kind of, you know, are level with you and are staying nice and square, just in case if he does beat you, he can almost beat you into, you know, if it's me, you and Pat, you know, he beats me, he can go straight into Pat's channel and I can deal with him, do you know?
Yeah, I'll definitely deal with him.
You're dealing with him, Pat. It's your job, right?
I'll bend down to tie my shoelaces and see how that works.
Yeah, I'll be down injured having a break.
I was just thinking, Brendan, what is it with, let's say, you know, the likes of Larmour, like, the more you see of him, the more video analysis is going to be of him. Like, did you ever find that when you were a player yourself that, like, you'd kind of, you'd have a couple of moves that would work, but all of a sudden somebody would work you out, or you had to kind of come up with new stuff?
Yeah, I think that's, like, that's kind of the way it's, you know, I think, you know, people, exactly that, people will be expecting, people will be expecting that to, you know, expect Jordan to do that. I remember when I first came into Leinster, you know, I kind of like to go on the outside of guys. I did it a couple of times. You know, I had a bit of success, and then, you know, it was kind of my go-to, and it was actually Ferg was defending against me, Ferg McFadden. And I did the exact same thing, and I got the ball and kind of going on that arc, and he was there waiting for me, and he absolutely, you know, he absolutely ended me because he knew it was coming. I think that's the thing now, when you know, for example, if I was playing against Jordan Larmour, like in September, I wouldn't be expecting, you know, I wouldn't be expecting him to do, you know, for example, to score the try that he scored against Munster. But now if I'm playing against him at the weekend, you know, I'm going to be fully aware of, you know, of his feet, of his pace. And I think that's, you know, that'll be the test now for him, when the defences are, you know, he's definitely that guy now during the week, you know, up on the board and in the analysis room, you know, his name will be there saying, you know, probably Leinster's biggest threat, you know, his feet, his pace. So, you know, the opposition will be waiting for him, and then that'll be a test of him then.
Now, one name isn't in the squad, and we completely expected this because this is the way it works, is Ty Byrne. So imagine there's a world where Ty Byrne actually stays in Wales and ends up playing for Wales because he'd qualify. Anyway, we won't go there. Hell of a performance this week for him. And in fairness, that's nothing new from anyone who's been watching him for the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, that was unreal, wasn't it? You just see Twitter going crazy, and like, anybody who was catching that game was not only raving about Scarlets, but raving about this man. And this guy was almost playing like he was in the back line. He just kept showing up in moves all the time. And
the step for the try was
To leave, wasn't it, Jonathan Joseph and Anthony Watson on their ass, like, was unbelievable. Like, and to do that at pace was great, wasn't it, Brendan?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I'm because he's such a great guy, Tyke, and it's absolutely brilliant to see him going so well. I just wish people could start getting his name right. Everyone calls him Tag Burns over here.
Oh, really?
So Tag Burns. I'm thinking, who the hell's Tag Burns? Then I realise I'm Tyke Byrne. Which, yeah, no, he's going to be so massive for Munster next year. He'll be in a green jersey potentially this summer once he's over there.
He's an interesting player because the way he plays, especially getting onto the ball, it's not your usual second row, you know, role if he's there. Not even the usual back row.
Yeah,
it's almost as if he's a second row shaped open side at times.
Isn't he, Brendan? He's just like kind of just showing up in support all the time and just kind of dipping in. and kind of doing his, he actually gets the work done because you can see the amount of turnovers he gets as well. But like showing up and all of a sudden in the middle of moves, like, you know, so it's not just that some of it are set plays and some of them is just this engine that this guy has on him and the awareness of kind of where to be in the attack and the passing ability he has as well. Like Scarlett's are unreal, and just, you know, Pivac is doing an absolutely unreal job, isn't he, at the moment. And did you get to catch much of that game, Brian, at all at the weekend?
Yeah, I watched the whole thing. We were down in London for our game against Quinn, so I was able to watch the whole thing. And just the brand that the you know, the Scarlets are playing, as you said, Stephen Jones and Pivac are doing an unbelievable job. But I think that's the thing with Tighe as well. Like you said, that he's like a back row. I actually watched the Scarlets play against the Ospreys over Christmas. I think he played 8 that day. So it looks like that they've given him a complete license to go and fetch the ball, and he's just absolutely reveling in that. But all those, I think the Scarlets could be a side that, you know, could surprise a couple of people this year. Obviously they went on and won the championship last year, beat Munster in the Aviva, but Bath could live with them, and they're missing, you know, Jonathan Davies. They're back their entire back three, and they went on and they did that sort of job on Bath, so they're a serious force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, and I suppose one name we can't leave this chat go by is Tommy Bowe. Tommy Bowe is announced his retirement now. There's a man who served Ulster rugby and Ireland pretty well, Pat.
Yeah, oh, unbelievable player, and serving, and still a cult hero in Ospreys as well, to go over there and win a couple of titles and score a rake load of tries for them as well. And just yeah, big lad, well liked within the squad, like total, you know, great pro, just some great memories. I remember he was doubted around the times, and I know we're talking about maybe one man in particular again, an RTE banging the table and giving out about him, saying he has no pace. But
I don't know who you can be talking about, Pat.
Can't
break your code.
Yeah, a certain Mr. Hook was kind of giving out about him at the time, and this man has doubted him, and Bo came back and proved everybody wrong. And I remember just that. Just, he was in unbelievable form. I know everybody talks about that Grand Slam game, and yeah, it is the one to talk about. Maybe I was going to go for a hipster choice there, but I remember that game away to France, and he scored 2 tries, and 2 amazing tries over in Paris. And that just kind of shows you that when it was a big occasion, he'd step up, and 30 tries for Ireland as well. Like, he's just knew where the try line was, so physical. And you can just see O'Gara, O'Driscoll, you know, Ferris, everybody who played with him just coming out and raving about him. It's just a sign of one of the legends of recent Irish rugby.
He's an incredible athlete, unbelievably professional. And, you know, I think I'll always remember that try he scored against Wales to win the Grand Slam, when I think O'Gara did the cross kick and he picked it up and he chained Williams, hunted him down, and, you know, Williams didn't even get a finger on him. And, you know, that just shows how quick he was. That's the try he scored, which I'll always remember.
Yeah, I'd like to thank the people of Wales, Ospreys in particular, because for my money, he just came back
better,
a serious player. From that experience playing the centre as well, I think it made him. But listen, well done, Tommy. Thank you very much. Right, listen, Brendan will be back in to answer your Twitter questions later. But Pat, you were talking to John Afoa.
Yeah, I was chatting to him there this week. He was just came from the treatment room, and found him in really good form. Doing well with Gloucester this year. I think they're up at 4th in the Premiership, and they have a couple of home games, so maybe that added to his mood. But I really enjoyed the interview. It was good.
It was good chat, yeah. The Beaver comes up. There is a bit of an SOS call from Ulster after he won the World Cup. That must have been you'll hear about this. This was a tough few weeks for John Afoa and the family, yeah. But yeah, it's good.
Listen, I was going to go through a few things in your career, but I wanted to kick off back in your school days, back in New Zealand. And I was reading up that you were once played with, I suppose, at a school level with Joe Rococo and Jerome Kano. How was that experience?
No, it was all good. Now, we all sort of grew up in the same sort of area, like back home in South Auckland. And there's another guy too. We all played under 15s together, Steve Donald.
Yes.
The big man from 2011 World Cup. So we all played under 15s together. So then we all went to high school. And then just somehow we were lucky enough that me, Joe and Jerome met up, and we all went to the same school for our last 3 years at college. So we had a good year and also played some good rugby for our school.
And were you the real man behind Stephen Donald's deciding to join Ulster? Were you happy enough to hear that deal had happened?
Yeah, and I listened the other day. I was like, oh, mate, get over there. It's going to be silly. you know, pass them one of the boys' phone numbers, you know, you got to look after the boys, make sure he's living in the right areas, doing the right things. And, yeah, no, I told him he'll enjoy his time for us.
And what type of a man is he like? You know, what are we kind of to expect when he arrives in Ireland?
Oh, he's got the deepest voice you ever met. Tall New Zealander. He's got some really, really deep voice, so that would freak you out. Mate, he's one of those teams that never passed the ball, so... you know, those boys like Cavey and Luke Marshall, they're not going to see much for the next 3 weeks. he loves the show and go, so... And he got a decent kick on him when he does connect with the ball, but he'll be good value, and I think the fans will enjoy him.
And you mentioned South Auckland for yourself. What part of Auckland did you grow up in?
No, I grew up in South Auckland, so a town called Papakura.
Oh, yeah.
I spent my whole life there. But then was lucky enough to sort of, once I started, left school... I was in the sort of Auckland team and then moved straight into the city and just to be close to training, so then that was it. I was lucky enough to play all those years, and fast forward all 16 years and I'm still going with Gloucester.
Yeah, because you're from a good under-21 side there, see. I think you won your two under-21 World Championships and then kind of fast-tracked into that New Zealand team. I think your debut was against Ireland back in 2005. Can you remember much of that game?
Yeah, no, I do. Like, you know, in New Zealand, it's sort of like a real race to try and get into the ABs. Like, you play your 19s and your 21s, and if you're sort of not making it when you're 23, 24, you know, you're missing out good enough, and all these other guys ahead of you. So, I'm very lucky to play those under-21 tournaments, get the wins with some good boys, and like you said, yeah, made my debut in 2005. And I remember well because I think the night before they had a fire at the stadium, and a lot of Kiwis weren't able to, like, to the ground because some of the stadium was all burnt down. It was me and Jason Eden made our debut, and I think it was a scrappy enough one because we had played Wales the week before, a few tired bodies, but it was just great to win on debut and make that first sort of start.
I think, yeah, what they did after that fire was they just had a big banner of Brian O'Driscoll, didn't they, at the one end of the ground. So and for you guys it would have been
all the drama too with Tana as well, because obviously there was 05 for Lions tour. And I remember the week he'd building up to it, like all the press was hounding Portana. He didn't play the game, but, you know, all the boys just wanted to make sure they got the job done.
And did you get a night out in Dublin then after it? Did you guys have a chance to have a night or two off before you kind of went on your tours?
Yeah, the boys, like, you know, the ABs are a good team and they look after the guys. I think a lot of the boys just wanted to stay in and stay local because obviously the media brought up before the game and was having a couple of clients at the hotel because I think it was a Grand Slam year that year. We might have played England the week after, then we finished in Scotland. We had a big tour on and wanted to make sure we did the four, and I think we ended up doing it, getting the Grand Slam.
Yeah, it was a pretty good team. Like, to look back on that, I know the All Blacks team had won the two World Cups back to back, but is that one of the best All Black teams of all time you were part of back then in 2005?
Yeah, it was a good team there. Yeah, I think it was a real start. Obviously, 2003 didn't go to plan, and then new management ran 2004 didn't go so well. But, you know, when they had those guys of like Richie and, you know, Gary, Carter, Carman, all those boys just met in their spots, Molina, Smith, you know, Ali, so all these guys that sort of were just, you know, they couldn't get out of the team. They were great in class for the ABs for a good 6-7 years and got them through that 2005-2006 period. Obviously, another hookup in 2007, but trusting the coaches to go all the way, and then, you know, it's panned out for them.
Yeah. So I see, what was it, maybe in the middle of all that, you were a few years into your career, but there was an idea that you might be a hooker, like they might have got you playing as a hooker. How many games did you get playing in the number two jersey?
Nah, only a couple. And obviously, we were very lucky at one stage. They had Heyman there, they had tight end side, they had Greg Somerville, who was there, Tialata, myself. Clark Dermody, they had all these foreign rowers, but they had a real shortage of hookers. They had Mialamu, they had Hoare, but their third hooker choice was a bit thin on the ground, so I thought it would be a good idea to sort of try and convert one of their props, and I think I was the shortest and smallest, so I got the nod, but only lasted for a few months. I found a couple of new guys, Flinney come into the fold, a few other boys come in, and it was nice, but I do enjoy playing prop rather than hooker.
And how did it all work out then? Because what is it, you got to finish off in a great high, like winning the World Cup in 2011 in Auckland as well, your hometown. But you had already agreed at that stage, had you, to join Ulster? How did that exactly come about?
Yeah, well, I was sort of going through reviews and contract stuff with New Zealand and just felt like I was at a good stage in my career where, you know, I was just going through negotiations and it was sort of stalling. They were keen for me to stay, but nothing was really moving. And then, you know, I got this offer from Ulster and, you know, we just thought, you know, I've done a good few years. There was a lot of travel back then for, like, Super Rugby, Tri-Nations, you're away pretty much for 2 months. And then you go on India tour for 6 weeks. So I had a couple of young kids and we thought, you know what, it might be a good chance to go away and sort of settle in some club rugby where, you know, the 5 week tours and the 6 week tours would be a thing of the past. So I signed for Ulster early January, told the coaches they were all happy enough. But the big thing for me was I was on like 80 something games for the Blues and I had to play every game of Super Rugby and make the playoffs to get to 100. And I was lucky enough we did that. And then again, going on to be part of the 2011 World Cup was amazing too.
And then how much of a break did you get after winning the World Cup before you arrived in Ulster? Like, did you get a chance
Zip, mate. Nah, David done me over, mate. Like, I think the game was on a Sunday, so the World Cup was on a Sunday, so we've done that. I think the IRB Awards were Monday night, so the boys had gone out again after that. And then I got an email and a call from my agent. He's like, oh, look, one of their props have gone down in Ulster. Can you fly over on Wednesday? I was just like, are you joking? I was meant to have 3 weeks to pack up the house, and Jerome Kano was getting married. I was the best man, so I wasn't meant to leave for another 3 or 4 weeks. I was just like, I just don't know. And they're like, oh, it'll be a good sign that you committed to the club. So World Cup was on Sunday. I think I flew out on the Tuesday or Wednesday, got to Belfast on the Thursday, played Connacht for 20 minutes, and then we had Claremont at home. And I played in that game. I was lucky enough we got the win, and that sort of helped set us up to make the final in 2011-2012 for Ulster.
And what is it? Did you then have to give the bad news to Jerome then, or did you get back to fly over for his wedding?
No, I flew all the way back to New Zealand. Had a week in New Zealand to go to the wedding, pack up the house and grab the kids, and then fly all the way back. So my missus wasn't overly happy, but that's just rugby, you know. He's got to roll off the punches.
And what is it, once you get into Ulster, I know they're kind of a tight enough team and they like to give lads nice warm welcomes when they get over. Did you have a nice kind of, be brought out for a few drinks in the first couple of weeks when you arrived over?
Yeah, well, it was all business at the start with obviously because we had the Europe stuff, but obviously one of the other Kiwis, he was there, Jared Payne, so I was with him for a little bit. But then when I got there with the family, and I was great. Obviously they had a reasonably settled team, some great Irish players, a couple of good like foreigners with y'all, and then Ruan there, and then, you know, it was just a great family team. And I really enjoyed my time there because we had a great rugby team and a great coaching staff, and we'd done some good things, but just obviously Leinster was just that little bit better, beating us in two finals.
And you'd actually, like, you'd still see maybe even on the likes of Twitter and stuff, you'd still be in touch with a lot of the Ulster lads and having a bit of slagging on online with them. But are there a couple of them that you actually really kind of regularly stay in touch with?
Yeah, and I think, you know, most teams when you move club, you sort of don't, it's only the odd time you get the ticks in. But I try and message the boys now and then. I talk to Big Stevie now and then, see how he's going when I see his ugly mug on TV or he's trying to promote stuff online, you know what I mean, as he does. That's on me today, you know, with his news coming out the last few days. So wish him well. And, you know, a lot of those boys like Pano and Greg Gilroy and all those lads, you know, you do 2.5 years with a team, it's hard not to like keep in touch and do all that kind of stuff and build those bonds.
And what do you think of Ferris? What is it now that he's the pundit every now and then just sticking the boot into Ulster? Do you think
he's right? He's harsh on the boys, but he tells it like it is, and he's got a good eye for the game. And I do enjoy the commentary now and then for the BBC Northern Ireland channel when he's lucky enough to get on Sky Sports. But Big Steve, I've got plenty of time for him. He's a real class lad.
Yeah. And you mentioned someone like Tommy there as well. Any kind of good experiences or kind of anything stand out from your time playing with him?
Yeah, well, he's just a big man, you know what I mean? Like, well, obviously playing Ireland a few times, they had some special players, but, you know, those two sort of real freaks of nature. Like, you know, I think Big Stevie, when he was fit, you know, it would be hard to beat him. Another number six that was more quick and more powerful than he was, and you know, Tommy was just a giant man that could run fast. So I remember when he'd done his poor knee, we played Northampton, we just done the back to back in Europe, and we got a good win away, over Northampton, and we're stuck in a real arm wrestle. I think it was like 9-6 or something at home at Ravenhall. Tommy gets the ball and he's pretty much away, clear run to the try line, and someone's ankle tapped him, and then he's busted his knee, and then he was out for the rest of the year. But he was just doing stuff like that, like on the verge of winning games for us or pulling a special play out for us.
And was it, were you kind of seeing like a, you know, your own kind of journey of coming over, having been an established All Black, and then kind of maybe leaving a little bit earlier, like in your 20s, to kind of come over to Europe? You kind of see the likes of Sapuagas coming over now from Highlanders and joining Wasps. Like, is it a tough decision to make? Like, is it is money the kind of main thing there? Is it kind of to try and set your family up for life? Is that the main motivation?
Yeah, I think everyone's different. You know, for me, I had done enough in NZ rugby. Like, I was really content and I had no regrets about leaving. And you know, I think those younger boys who come over now, maybe they're thinking they got a plan to go back or to do stuff like that, you know, like Big Steve Lautour talking about he might keen to get back because he's only, you know, he's much younger than like myself when I left. But you know, that's a big decision to leave because you never know what's going to happen. You might really find that you find your feet and enjoy yourself, or you might not. So it's a big decision when you're by yourself or with family to go over to a new place. But I think generally rugby is such a community sport, and you know, every team will take you under their wing. So it's hard to say what motivates the boys, but I think it's great for the rugby up in Northern Hemisphere, getting these talented players from all these different countries, bringing a good brand of rugby to the tournament.
And you kind of seeing like just how harsh rugby can be in a way with what's going on with Jared, like kind of a guy you said you get on well with. Have you been in touch with him? Like, you know, hopefully he'll get back soon enough. But it's kind of tough to see a guy going through something like that at the moment.
Yeah, I know it is. You know what I mean? Like, go on such a high, sort of go away with the Lions, get an injury, and then just sort of not being able to get back. And you know, also in some good form at the moment, some good wins of late, and you know, I'm sure he's desperate to get back out there. Last time I chatted to him, you know, he was sort of just training and just trying to get the body right, because there's one thing with like the head, but you know, if you're not training and getting those knocks, you don't want to come back too early, then you break your body. So he's smart enough, he knows what to do. So you know, they got a good medical team, good trainer with JD over there, and hopefully we'll see him back soon enough.
And then in terms of yourself with Gloucester now, you've been there a while, and going really well this season, and a couple of home games coming up. The ambition to kind of climb that table a little bit more?
Yeah, I just think we're just trying to like get things going. Similar to when I was at Ulster, you know, I think now we've got a really good balanced team, an older team, and we just know how we want to play and what works for us. You know, we're not trying to copy anyone's style. The coach has got an idea how he wants to play, but he wants to make it sort of natural for the boys. So if they want to tweak it a little bit, then he's more than happy for the boys to tweak it and do play to our strengths. So seems to be working at the moment, you know, sort of through that Christmas period, and it's all sort of goes quick now. So it's about managing the boys, making sure we get through injury free and make the best run as possible for the last sort of run to the end of the season.
And what about yourself in terms of playing on? You're going to flog yourself, flog the body for another couple of years yet?
Yeah, well, we'll see how we go. I think I want to play for a few more years, but, you know, the kids are a bit older now. We've been away for sort of seven and a half years from New Zealand, and my wife had gone back for Christmas, and, you know, the kids had saw their cousins and their family, and I think she felt like it was important that we don't stay too long because, you know, our majority of our roots are back there, and get those kids sort of back into that New Zealand lifestyle, walking around bare feet, mate, climbing trees, you know, as they do. It's too cold to climb anything over here. Everything's got frost on it.
Listen, perfect. Listen, cheers for that, John, and good luck with the rest of the season. And yeah, hope things go well for you guys.
No worries. Cheers, mate. Thanks.
All the best.
Kick, and there's belief there for Ireland, and maybe there's something in this. Maybe the opportunity is there. It is Tommy Moe! Magic! Bo gathers! Shane Williams is getting him! He's not going to get the Ulsterman! Bo's in underneath the Welsh post! Holy God in heaven, what a try by Tommy Bo!
Welcome to the match previews. Myself and Pat are going to continue our head-to-head, and we're going to try and talk you through the permutation for this weekend, because it's a belter. Right, going back to the important stuff, right? 1-0 to Pat last week.
It was a sneaky 1-0 win there, yeah.
Very sneaky tactics going on here, yeah. But well done. So
yeah.
It's now 60 to 52.
52, yeah. So that's it. Called Ulster right, and that was about it. But yeah, delighted that I got at least one right from last weekend.
Yeah, I got nothing right. Okay, let's quickly through the Irish fixtures anyway. So Montpellier play Leinster. Leinster, this was actually no handicap for a long time, but Leinster are 2-point favourites now, down in Montpellier. I could see this match going either way.
Yeah. Really.
It's actually a good thing it's the start of the weekend, because at least both teams have to play. Technically, Montpellier have a chance, but not really. I'd say a narrow loss to Leinster would be no surprise to me, so that's what I will go. I will go for Leinster to actually cover, but they're not going to lose.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go for Leinster to win as well. They just keep impressing me, and you know, normally when you hear coaches at the end of the game saying, "Well, we're not thinking about the quarters; it's all about next week," you'd say this is just pure spin. But I actually do believe it with this Leinster squad. They're very focused this season, and they just have such depth as well. And this might be the last game a lot of the boys play now before the Six Nations, the last proper run out, so they're going to give it a proper whack, I'd say. So I'm happy enough to back Leinster in that.
So
one,
two Leinsters there.
Yeah,
grand. Okay, Munster 28 point favourites against Cast, right?
82 points favourites.
Jesus, this is like, it's a huge line. I'm going Castor on this, but this, we'll get into the permutations now in a second, but this has there's a lot of stuff riding on this game for everyone involved throughout the competition. It's actually a crucial cog in the wheel. So I'm going Castor to finish inside that. I could get roundly whipped on this one, but
I'll go against you there and go Munster, and okay. But then 28's massive, but it could easily be 40.
Yeah. Wasps against Ulster. This is a funny one. Ulster originally started out favourites for this game, and now it swung all the way around to Wasps. Wasps are 4-point favourites. The good thing is that no matter what happens, when we get to the end of this, the end of this weekend, those games will still be live. So Wasps will have a chance of going through no matter what happens in any other game, right? So I am going for Ulster in this. It might be a hard thing.
Yeah.
But I'm going on Ulster.
I think I'm going to go, although we've gone the same for everything, so I'll just, for the sake of difference, I'll go Wasps on it, but wouldn't be surprised if Ulster get the job done. And it is funny, it's I wonder if people think with Lima Sapuaga kind of signing up, do they think he's going to arrive this weekend? Like, you know, is that why the betting has kind of changed so drastically? It's kind of a crazy turnaround, isn't it?
And no James Haskell.
No, and yeah, like it was very funny listening to all the old ex-English rugby internationals saying that, you know, we shouldn't have even got a red card. I think he should have.
Let the boys play.
Yeah, but I think he should have. But you know, he'll be stewing about that. He went to make a hit, and that's the price he had to pay there.
Yeah, there's another one where you get your early remorse tweet in. Seems to count.
Yeah, it seems to be a trend.
Okay, so let's get into the really exciting bit, right? So the permutations. What happens? Okay, so. Right now, throw this week's table out the window, because there's going to be a couple of results that are just going to happen. So Munster are going to be cast.
If I could show people, I wish people could see Andy's permutations list here. It's
a lot of homework,
a lot of
on
post-its.
So
A4 sheet.
If the bookies are all right, right, this is how it looks. It's Leinster top seeds, 27 points. Clermont slip in a second with 22. Mm-hmm. That's narrow win, no bonus point over Ospreys. That's thoroughly reasonable. Munster bonus point win will get them into third on 21. La Rochelle bonus point win against Quinn gets them into 21. They're behind on points difference. Scarlets squeak in the win against Toulon. They're also on 21 points. So this is all coming down to points difference. Then you're getting into the second places. It's Toulon 19, Racing 19. That'll be a Toulon narrow defeat to Scarlets. Racing narrow win at Leicester. And then you've got a clutch of teams on 18 points with all a very similar points difference of between 30 and 40. This is going to be a squeaker. And I've gone through like the various, okay, what are the reasonable upsets? So an Osprey narrow win in Clermont doesn't change the equation that much, you know? It gets Ospreys in, not other people are screwed.
Yeah.
Ulster beat Wasps. If Ulster beat Wasps, that throws a number of different things around. Ulster move up into 21, but they would lose the tiebreaker to La Rochelle. So the tiebreakers will come into play this weekend if we get some of these upsets. There's even some like three-way tiebreakers.
So if Ulster even get to 21, like I would have thought they're bang on then for a home quarter final as well, but do they need the bonus point even to get that?
If Ulster beat Wasps but don't get the bonus point, they are going to lose the tiebreaker. They need the bonus point.
Oh, lose the tiebreaker, as in they might not even get into the quarterfinals, even if
they would get into the quarterfinals, mm-hmm. but as a second place team, because La Rochelle have the tiebreaker. Right. So similarly, if La Rochelle, if there is a scenario here, when I said Wasps are still alive, if Wasps, Ulster, and La Rochelle all finish level on points, Wasps win the tiebreaker because you have to take Quinns out. And then you've got your own mini league table. That's how it works. You're just using the games between the teams involved within the group.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. There's a world here where Cast go through with a negative points difference. I don't want to be part of that world.
It's one of the craziest ones. It's one of the closest ones ever, isn't it? That you know, normally you always have two or three sides that like blitz their group and then everybody else is scrapping for seconds. But this is kind of only Leinster seems to be the only dominant team and everybody else has been, you know, you could have lost, you know, even look at Cast there, you could still get through at this stage.
Yeah, we're not going to see like last year, like Toolong got through with 16 points. That's not happening. Mm. You need minimum of 18 to get through here, and there's a number of scenarios where you need a minimum of 19 to be in the conversation. So here's another aspect of this weekend. It's definitely not beyond the bounds of possibility that there are no English sides in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, do Exeter have the best chance here, or is it, you think?
Exeter, right now, Exeter have the best chance.
And they're going away to Glasgow, which is
Going away to Glasgow, not a given.
Yeah.
Like, Glasgow can play. Saracens and Bath are in trouble because they, even if they get big bonus point wins, they still only get to 18. So Exeter, they can get up to 19, or even just 18, their points difference is already pretty good, but they're hardly going to give Glasgow a hiding. But let's say Exeter don't get a bonus point win in Glasgow, right? If Ospreys win in Claremont, the English sides are all in trouble.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Right? If Ulster beat Wasps, the English sides are all in trouble, right? Because the entire table changes and all the 18-pointers fall out. So Wasps, at the end of this weekend, could be fighting for the entire Premiership. Right, Wasps and Quinns could be fighting for the Premiership. This is how
it's
weird.
It's funny
this
how
is.
It all turns around, isn't it? Like, because you know, like you could easily like have the scenario that there's three Irish provinces involved, and you know, a couple of Welsh provinces as well, or regions as well. So, just nuts. And then yeah, you'll probably have the there'll be some tables banged over in England again, and somehow the rules will get changed again. But the one I've kind of found interesting when we were kind of working out our permutations on Sports Joe earlier in the week was that somehow you could have a scenario where Leinster get the top seeding, get a home quarter final, and they end up against Exeter again. Like, and Exeter pushed them damn close at the Aviva before Christmas, so they'd be up for that. So it's hardly a reward for Leinster for finishing top.
What are the odds on beating Exeter three times in that close a time period?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd like that.
No, and then...
But would you prefer Saracens?
I think I prefer Exeter, isn't that the... Yeah, it's like, I don't think I'd like Saracens. Imagine your reward was for finishing top seeds with Saracens. Like, Ulster gotten, was it 2013? And was it the Payne red card then at the time? And you just don't want to come across... If Saracens cannot be in the top eight, then I think everybody will sleep better over the next couple of months.
Okay, Brendan's back with us, and we're going to answer some of your fan questions. As usual, we put a call out on Twitter, and these are the best ones we got in. Use the hashtag AskTHY to get yours in for next week. First one. Right, this comes from Dermot. Brendan, it says, can Brendan do the Ryle Nugent impression? What's the Ryle Nugent impression, Brendan?
I may have done a Ryle Nugent impression on a plane coming back from Treviso. Geez, could be five or six years ago, which seems to constantly, after trying to get it taken off YouTube, still stays on YouTube. So that's probably where this Ryle Nugent impression comes from. But you know, with Tommy Bell retiring, you know, this week, I think it'd be rude not to. To do a little one involving Tommy Bell.
Yeah, I think that's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I think so too. To be fair, okay, here goes. People will be looking at me now, thinking, "What the hell is he doing?" Anyway. Geez, I need to remember this. I've done it in years. Here we go. You ready, lads?
Oh, yeah.
Sexton to Darcy. Back to Sexton. Johnny Sexton. Tommy Bow. Yes.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, we're really helping putting this to bed, aren't we?
Yeah.
Excellent. Good man, Brendan.
Brendan, where are you sitting right now when you're doing that?
Yeah.
I'm just sitting in the car here.
Oh, that's grand.
Talking away to himself. Okay, here's one from the Black and Red, who they put in good questions. They're from Edinburgh, I think. So
yeah.
Shout out to our Edinburgh listeners. Lots of attackers getting the benefit of not held decisions. Why the change? Are more players breaking tackles, or is it the impact of the breakdown laws? I have a view on this. Brendan, are you seeing more players getting back to their feet after the tackle because they haven't been held?
Yes and no. Now, two guys did in our match the weekend and both got penalised for it. So depends if the referees are hot on it.
I'll tell you what I'm seeing. I'm seeing the defensive guys not committing because of the new ruck rule. And they're making that decision faster. And so guys are feeling there's less pressure around them. They feel as if there's no hands, I'm gonna go for it. And then you're into the situation where, like Brendan says, is the ref hot in this or not? But I certainly perceive the same thing as the questioner, which is we're seeing more people getting back to their feet.
Yeah, it's the Chris Clote try. Remember he got down in Cork there before Christmas when he was tackled, went to the ground, no one stood over him and he went in and scored a try. That's one of them, isn't it? It's just, I'd say it's a breakdown. Yeah, that's what I would say. Yeah.
I always like seeing it. It shows a player who's still
clued
thinking.
In. Yeah.
Yeah. They're seeing all the angles. Okay, next one. Jamie McCauley, you may as well cover the correct pronunciation of Larmer. You've me awful confused. Right, Pat?
I would say Larmer.
Brendan?
Larmer.
I'm going with Larmer. There you go.
Lamour, is that what some people are saying?
I've heard Lamour.
Lamour to your.
Lamar.
Da, 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 da. Yeah. There was it Nick Mullins was on, wasn't he? I see he was on Twitter last night trying to get the pronunciation right as well.
Yeah.
Doing his homework.
Yeah, doing his homework.
It's good. I like to see commentators doing their homework. It's good.
I got an email there yesterday and it was just, I said, here's my Ireland team to play. You know, here's the Ireland team I want to play France. And the subject heading was no farmer. And then it was like, why do you not have Larmer in your squad? Spelt horribly wrong. Like, but I thought I was getting spam email or something like that. But
maybe it's really sophisticated spam specifically for rugby journalists.
But no farmer, so rhymes with Larmer. So I'm never going to forget that pronunciation.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, anonymous. I know.
Next one, right? This is from Jason Ward. Any opinions on clear outs at ruck time with the complete lack of anything resembling an arm, more so the fact the referees are not policing this facet of the game? Well, I don't think they're not policing it, but very valid question. Come up again and again over the last few years. You see yellows and then a red if it's one of those where there's contact to the head. Pat, what do you reckon?
Yeah, it's often the attacking side seem to get the benefit of the doubt, where these lads just come flying through and off their feet to kind of clear out rooks as well. And it depends. I suppose, Brendan, you probably know that as well. It's like some refs are kind of hot on it and some guys will let it go. And lads know pretty much within the first 10 or 15 minutes if this is fair game and they can just go hurtling into the breakdown.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing now that, you know, I think you see just like, you know, a passage of play could happen and then the TMO could tell the ref to go back, and the ref goes back and he checks when the attacker has put his arm around the fella's neck and he's you know, there's no actual that much harm done, but they penalise him for that. And then obviously some refs just go like are just so hot on if any sort of part of the body touches the head, it's an automatic red card basically at this stage. So your technique in that has to be spot on. So it does. Your wee James Haskell sent off the weekend for colliding with Jamie Roberts' head, and it was 100% accidental, but his shoulder hit his head, and then that was that.
And does Haskell, because I know he was very, he probably knew he was in the wrong, like he was like pretty quick on Twitter, and you know, it was good to see him and Roberts kind of going back and forth about it. But does he know he's wrong at the end of the game? Does he have to apologise to you guys, or do you guys know that's just something that happens out on the pitch? Like, he was trying to make a big hit.
I know he knew he was wrong. Like, he apologised, you know, straight away. And
you know, he's very honest. He's a very honest individual, and, you know, he knew exactly, you know, probably, you know, when the ref was showing the, you know, when the ref was showing the, or when the TMO was showing to the ref on the pitch, they was thinking, shit, or I'm gonna be walking there.
Yeah, the if you want to see a pretty bad clear out, the Castres, Mama Vaipulu, I'm probably butchering the pronunciation. Given 5 weeks, James Harrington on Twitter was pointing this out for a bit of work against Ajahn. Nasty little challenge. There's a guy, the 10 is trapped at the bottom of the pile, and he just comes in from the side, head high. Jesus, that's the sort of thing that they need to get rid of. But okay,
it's the stuff that's malicious, and it's the stuff that's actually genuinely trying to hurt someone. You know, it's like that. That's what we need to get rid of, I think. But the majority of them are kind of, you know, someone just wrapped up and it's accidental almost.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we even saw with, like, Vunipola trying to make a big hit, got it wrong, got his angles wrong and ended up damaging himself, and now he's out of the first two or three games of the Six Nations,
Yeah, with a broken arm, yeah.
Okay, before we go, the Bastro affair over in, that's become odd. Murad's getting investigated now as well, Pat, for his comments.
Yeah, I didn't like that at all, and I didn't even like that, like, they knew that the announcement was coming and they still named him in the squad as well, so that's another show from the French, the FF4, that, like, they're supporting this lad as well, and just horrible, like, just to even think that you could call someone, like, you know, a homophobic phrase, like, you could call this lad a faggot, the fact that you could do that and then some would say top end of that is a 6-week ban is pretty horrible. I don't know. I don't think I'd like to be in the room when they're deciding what words get certain week bans, but 6 weeks as a maximum for that sounds pretty crap as well. Like, and then to get that cut in half by 50% just because you pled guilty when it was caught on TV, it just doesn't sit right with me at all. It's pretty horrible.
The more
I haven't seen too much of the incident. I saw a bit of it on social media, but, you know, there's absolutely no time for that in the game whatsoever.
No, needs to be got rid of. And again, I'd agree that the mixed signal is the thing. I don't think mixed signals are good when it comes to this side of thing. It's worth looking at the clip. Bastro seems to be reacting to something all right, but that wasn't referenced from anything I can see in the decision. It's simply that they're saying there was no aggregating factors at all. Murad's comments are a different kettle of fish now.
He's in trouble as well.
That boy is in trouble.
Sorry, lads, what did Murad actually say? I don't know what he said. I haven't seen it.
So Murad, speaking about the Bastro incident, basically said, so he went off and saying, look, this term is in, you know, basically in the lexicon. It's not, he wasn't making an actual homophobic comment. It's just a bad word that you call someone when you're annoyed and frustrated. I'm paraphrasing, right? And then he said that he's worried about the Mormon history or whatever with the Welsh and Irish. And it just, honestly, it's bizarre stuff. It includes a reference to basically the only thing you're not allowed to talk about is paedophilia. It's just, it's really weird. And it's on the Rugby Rama website up there. It's worth a look. But they did announce EPCR that they're investigating those comments. I wouldn't want more. It is my defence counsel. That's all I'd say.
No way.
Yeah, and the very, very last thing, because I know people will ask, and I was asked before the show, we haven't done a huge amount on Gerbrand Grobler, right? And right now, we have nothing huge to add this week. There's been a lot already said about it. I will say, if you want some nuanced thought, look at Michael Foley's piece in the Times.
That was good, yeah.
That was very good. A lot of nuance into this, and what I would like to see is a bit more nuanced thinking. We will cover it. And we'll do it right, but right now we're not adding to it this week. If you've got any views, email in, whatever, open to it, but I just didn't want to leave the show go by without actually referring to it. Okay, we're going to leave it there. Thanks to Brendan, to Pat and John, to Alan Lucknan for producing, and Shane Dempsey was on sound. We'll be back next Thursday with a new podcast. Subscribe to it on iTunes, Podcast Republic, SoundCloud and every good podcast app to get it straight to your phone. This has been The Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.